Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your negative capability of music news and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. Hearing Full Stop from Radiohead's first record in 5 years, A Moon-Shaped Pool. Both that and James Blake's new record in 3 years, The Color in Anything, came out within the last several days in a sudden gray miasma that dropped upon us and that we, as members of the critical press, had to clean up and fight our way through. And to talk about it with me today is John Pareles. Hey, John.
Hey, Ben. Yes, the greatest week in British mopery probably in the history of recorded music. So both of us spent some long Sundays immersed in space and darkness and lamentation and misery.
Yeah, we had to
quickly... We also had to write.
We had to quickly process lifetimes of misery and dread.
That's how we make the big money.
And it's funny, I mean, we're getting used to this now.
The sudden drops,
yeah. Yes, we're getting really used to this. But these are different kinds of records. Beyoncé's record came out and you saw movies of her smashing things and making a statement about rupture. Radiohead's record and James Blake's record come out and we're talking about dread, dystopia, dysphoria, absence, disconnection.
Well, you're talking breakups too on the Radiohead record.
Yes. Well, on the Radiohead record, perhaps we're talking about an actual breakup, although who am I to say? And on the James Blake record, we're talking about the persona in the James Blake record is constantly talking about a breakup or some sort of
distance.
Romance in the past that he can't recover.
Yeah.
First, let's talk about Radiohead and put it in context a little bit. It's been 5 years since the last Radiohead record, and Thom Yorke and Johnny Greenwood have been doing their own things. Maybe you can talk about this one in relation to the last one.
Well, the last one, The King of Limbs, which was also a very sudden drop, The King of Limbs still reads to me as kind of a confused record, as a record where we've got all these ideas in our heads and we don't quite know how to sort them out yet. It felt like they were a little bit at the mercy of their machines, that all of their looping and strange sounds. They wanted to pile so much into it that it got a little cluttered. Mm-hmm. And it also got a little remote. You had the feeling that Thom Yorke's voice was just sort of fitting into rhythmic spaces a lot. Mm-hmm. There are some good songs on there like Lotus Flower and Codex, but it takes a while to get to them. Mm-hmm. This one feels like the songs are back in front. The melodies are back in front. There's still a lot going on in them, but there's verses and choruses. There's also songs that start with a kind of a floating thing and evolve, but you get the feeling it's a much more human-sounding record. It sounds much more organic, even though it probably isn't.
Mm. So it's more human and more organic because of the signifiers.
Well, the vocals are out front. There's pianos and guitars more than twitchy little electronic things.
Sure.
Though there's plenty of twitchy little electronic things. Radiohead's always been about technology in a way. Radiohead's been fascinated by it. Back in the OK Computer days, they were really worried about it. Now it's just what they do. It's just where they live. It's where all of us live. We're all surrounded by this barrage of information that we can pick up on our phones. And for Radiohead, technology is now a tool that if they want to bring a perfectly poised guitar sound to the front, they do that. If they want to bring 1,000 piano loops and pile them onto the song, they do that. Mm-hmm. It's just one more toy. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid of technology anymore. It's just the environment for them now.
So are we saying that electronic sounds don't signify something greater per se, and acoustic sounds don't signify something greater per se?
I think we're getting to that point.
It's just more organically, mixed together.
Well, let's talk about your guy, James Blake.
Yeah.
Because he's in the electronic wilderness. He's in Glitchland.
My guy, James Blake.
The one you spent the long weekend with.
Well, right. He's in Glitchland. I mean, his basic idea, I think, is still very strong. He's a singer and he plays the piano. And he has this strong connection between his voice and playing the piano or playing a keyboard in real time. And playing it way behind the beat and playing with a weird kind of spongy touch, so that the music sort of drags. But then he might just do a couple of bars of that and then start chopping it up and making it digitally stutter. And I mean, he came out of the English dance scene where everything is about stuttering and sort of low-key stuttering too. That whole world of dance music, like Joy Orbison and late English dubstep or post-dubstep or whatever.
But it's all about making you feel that something just got chopped off at the end. I mean, there's that loop on this album, "I'm Sorry You're No Longer Her."
Yeah.
When you think he's going to say, "I'm sorry you're no longer here."
Yeah, right.
It's like you feel the truncation. There's that little bump every time it comes around.
Yeah. So he's behind time. He's outside of time. He's unrelievedly gloomy. There is a track at the end that I really love called "Always," which is just, it's just vague, you know? It's quite beautiful and it's vague. It's not sort of hits you over the head, morose.
Always. She just walks the land, grounds to an old war, and I'm acting like I'm never sure.
That was "Always" by James Blake. One thing I went into in my review was I started thinking about his falsetto. I mean, that's his trademark. He sings in it almost all the time. Three-quarters of the record is falsetto. And it's really pretty, although it's kind of joyless. And I started thinking about falsettos, and I remembered this something I read from a Nathaniel Mackey novel where he talks about Al Green, and he talks about Al Green's falsetto being a rejection of the world as he knows it, an implicit criticism of the world, the compromised world, the racist world, the whatever. And using his falsetto implies, you know, escape and other possibilities. I thought, A, I would love to have written that. I would love to have had that insight. But B, when you realize that about Al Green, and I actually do believe that it seems very plausible to me. That sounds totally believable. You know, that's a great insight. And you're getting at a hidden meaning, a deep meaning. With James Blake, it's sort of all there. He's singing in a high voice because he's a displaced person, because he doesn't feel at home.
He's already a ghost.
He's a ghost. Yes, he's a ghost. He's telling you, I'm a ghost. I'm not of this world. You know, I'm not of this time, whatever. Al Green isn't telling you that. You have to dig a little if you want to...
Well, Tom York's falsetto is also,
yeah,
but it's ghostly, but it's also, I'm being serene despite all the turbulence around me.
Yeah.
It feels more like a struggle against the environment.
Mm-hmm.
He's holding on to the legato while everything else is crumbling around him.
The thing that I find about this record, which is incredibly long, James Blake's The Color in Anything, an hour and a quarter, a single record, is that it doesn't change, you know? There's something finally that I find limited about a perspective of total unrelieved, romanticized dread and gloom. I feel like it doesn't really represent an entire persona or personality or a whole brain, you know? And sometimes I feel this way about Radiohead, I have to say.
They're all over the place. I mean, they're not locked into a single flavor.
Right.
And it gets subsumed into that serene dread that's always in their songs, but there's always undercurrents.
Mm-hmm.
And with Blake, I feel like he's more one flavor. You can see why he's so influential, though, as a producer, Blake, because there is that flavor, and that's a flavor he introduced, that spacious, floating, minor key. Let's just sit here and pause a while and think about how sad we are.
Yeah.
And so Beyoncé's used it on her album. Every podcast now is going to be about Beyoncé in some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But Beyoncé's used it. People have stolen from it. Tom York did a whole album, Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, that sounded like he'd been listening to too much James Blake. I mean,
Kanye West used it by using Bon Iver.
Yeah. So I mean, that flavor is really,
yeah.
There's a lot in it, and FKA Twigs, you know, there's a whole school now of James Blake influenced.
Yeah, although okay, with FKA Twigs, there's something else too.
Well, at least Janet Jackson.
Yeah, right. There's sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
With James Blake, there's very little sex.
But you can see how he's so pervasive because it's something you can put your finger on. I want that.
Right.
If I'm making an album and I'm Beyonce, I want that for a song.
Right. It's finite. Have we said yet that he was on the was on the Beyonce record? Right. He sang on the first track, right?
Yeah.
He has a writing credit on two tracks anyway. Why don't we stop now and take a moment to listen to Points from James Blake's record, The Color in Anything. It's sad that you're no
tracks we ride, and I know I'll love you for a very long time. Just stay mine, just stay mine, just stay mine.
That was Points by James Blake from his new record, The Color in Anything. So he's got his thing, and
Radiohead is more multiplicitous to me. Radiohead is Hydra-headed.
Right.
Radiohead, you don't know what's going on.
I mean, would Beyonce use Radiohead?
I'd be really curious. I wonder if they'd do it.
Right. But hard to say, right? Right off the bat? It's like it's hard to say what element she would use.
Maybe if she wanted a nice Beatles chorus, she'd go to Radiohead.
Yeah.
A Beatles chorus with a little disturbance at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a song in this album, Desert Island Discs, which Tom York's been performing solo, and it's basically your drone English folk song. And you hear it on the album, you think, oh, you know, he's just strumming the guitar. And then you put on the headphones, as I did through the many listenings, and you realize there's all this reverb and echo and sort of slithery stuff going on in the background. They're always doing something in contrast. They're always doing something you don't expect. They're always doing something almost subliminal.
Mm.
Which is why every Radiohead album should come with a decoder ring, both for the lyrics and for the music, and which is why Radiohead has that wonderful, massive internet following that knows every detail of every outtake of every song, because there's so much in there to decipher.
Mm-hmm.
And James Blake, I'm sure people are deciphering his productions now because they have all those great glitches, and because they have, you know, how does that piano sound go backwards and forwards and sideways, and what's that hissy thing? There's a lot to figure out there technically, but there's not, to me, as much layering, as much emotional depth. Mm-hmm. Radiohead's more self-contradictory in a way.
Well, so speaking of self-contradictory, on this Radiohead record, you've got representations of Tom York's aloneness, soloness, you know? The songs that he's been developing on his own, the last track.
Well, True Love Waits, which he's been singing for 20 years, and is out there as a solo guitar record.
So you've got representations of Tom York's aloneness, and you've got representations of Johnny Greenwood's working with lots of people-ness, you know, representations of him as a film soundtrack composer working with orchestras, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the creative mesh in Radiohead, because York is musically illiterate. York can't read music.
Mm-hmm.
He can certainly play guitar and sing and do all that, but it's not on the page for him. It's in his head, like Paul McCartney. A lot of great musical illiterates.
Mm.
And Greenwood is studied music. Greenwood can, like, sit down and write notes on a staff and give it to an orchestra and have him play them. So you have this combination of the intuitive or untrained or self-guided or solipsistic or inspired, whatever word you want to use, Tom York, and you have Greenwood, who is thinking about Christoph Penderecki textures, and he's thinking about how orchestras work. When I interviewed them when In Rainbows came out, I talked to Greenwood at one point, and he told me he went into a studio with a string ensemble and had them play all 12 tones together and just, like, got a long track of 12 sustained tones so that any time he could use this as a resonance in any song, because different notes would resonate against the 12 tones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is how he thinks. This is like the kind of craftsman, like, let's work with the frequencies and harmonics of these songs.
Mm.
This album, there are a lot of strings on this album. They do a lot of different things in each song. In the first song, Burn the Witch, there's all this tapping and plucking. I actually asked the publicist how it was done because I asked whether it was collegno, which is banging the bow on the back of the string. They said, no, they use guitar picks to get this plucking sound. But they're down to that level of detail.
The string players.
The string players are plucking violins with guitar picks, among other things. Hmm. But they're also bowing. They're also doing glissandos. They're also doing trills. It's Burn the Witch is this great, nervous crescendo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's all in the strings.
Yeah, texturally, it's really cool. And also, I get a sense of physical space. Like, I'm hearing physical space.
Well, you're hearing overtones of actual wooden instruments.
Yes, I'm hearing a mass of wooden instruments in a room. And somehow that feels amazing to me these days to hear that. I mean, one used to hear it often. These days, not so much. So you get this feeling of physical space.
You also get this feeling of community.
And of community.
I mean, the thing about James Blake is the reason he conveys being all alone so well is because he's all alone.
There's lots of space in his music, too, but space meaning, you know, blankness, erasure, nothingness. And it's digital. You know, like, you're not in the room with him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a sense of where he's making this. Let's talk a little bit about True Love Waits. The record is bookended by old songs, basically.
Older songs. Well, Burn the Witch, though, has only been, like, teased at. They put some of his lyrics in some artwork.
Right.
They mentioned it and played a couple of chords and then played another song. Thank you, Radiohead internet people, for like letting me know all this
so
stuff.
So it's never been played as a complete song, as far as anybody knows?
As far as I could determine,
yeah.
No.
Okay.
But it's been teased.
Yeah.
So it's been unveiled on this.
Right.
They unveiled it with a video that uses a British children's TV series style of animation.
Right.
The series is called Trumpton.
Right.
I don't know if there's a current events connection. Could well be. To tell the story of the Wicker Man, where a policeman investigating supposedly human sacrifice in this small pagan town actually ends up getting sacrificed himself. And Burn the Witch is about, you know, there's witch hunts going on, everybody's not saying a word.
Mm.
The reason in the Wicker Man the guy is sacrificed is to keep the prosperity of the town.
Hmm.
There's a political allegory going on here, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. But that song's just been teased at. True Love Waits, though, has been out there. They've sung it a lot live. But on stage, it's Thom Yorke strumming a guitar. It's chords. And in this version, it's completely dissected. It's a few piano notes. It's a four-note piano motif that then describes one chord and then describes the next chord, but it's very minimalistic. And then suddenly there's this, not suddenly, but gradually, actually, there's a cascade of other pianos going on. You don't know if they're loops. You don't know if they're people in the background. They sound, actually, I'm thinking that if Johnny Greenwood went to music school, maybe he went to a school that had a bunch of practice rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard other pianos leaking in from the other practice rooms.
Mm.
There's some of that going on. But you have the feeling that there's something outside the singer's particular true love, he's saying, don't leave me.
Mm-hmm.
You have the feeling that there's a world outside. You have that feeling that there's this, in Radiohead, you always get this feeling that there's this world of information jittering around outside you besides your own personal problems.
Mm-hmm.
This album kind of juggles, lots of songs juggle thoughts of global warming with a messed up romance. I mean, you don't know, there's one song that goes, you messed up everything, and you don't know if he's talking to the ex.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if he's talking to the population. You don't know if he's talking to the politicians.
Mm. The record isn't a motion from political toward personal. It's they're running
parallel,
together.
They're simultaneous, or they're isomorphic. They're mapped onto each other.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's in his 40s. I mean, he's got a pretty fixed life. I mean, you start thinking about politics and stuff when your emotional life is, you know, in one place.
Sure.
Lots of rock songwriters turn political when they're no longer making up and breaking up and running around. And
so he's 47.
Yeah.
I know that because that's my age, too. And he separated last year from his partner of 23 years.
Radiohead Trainspotters, you picked up
on a little detail on the record.
Daydreaming. There's backwards vocals on Daydreaming. Yeah. And if you put them in Audacity and play them backwards, you hear him saying, half my life.
Yeah.
2 times 23 is 46, half my life.
Yeah.
The decoder ring suggests that that's a personal illusion.
Let's stop and hear a minute of Daydreaming from Radiohead's new record.
Dreamers,
Was Daydreaming, Radiohead. Are there other ways in which you can interpret this record as a, I don't know if you want to call it a breakup record, but the end of a relationship, something to do with love changing? Can you interpret the whole thing?
You can, but he's also thinking about what's next. I mean, after, and in one song, one of the optimistic endings of the songs goes, there can be different kinds of love. Which is a kind of hopeful thing. There's a really pristine almost ballad called Glass Eyes in which he arrives at a town, he gets off the train, it's frightening, he's having a panic attack, everybody's got cold gray faces, and he sees a path up the mountain. He doesn't know where it leads, but it doesn't matter. Mm. I mean, it's kind of a perfect Radiohead attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it is, but I got to get out of here, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
But he's going somewhere. He's not locked into it.
Right.
And he's looking forward. There's no mudslinging on this record.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, I broke up with you and it's all your fault. There's none of that sort of down and dirty, you know, infighting. It's more like, I'm in this new situation. What do we do? But that new situation could also be global warming.
Sure.
Because there's songs about birds and fish dying. You know, we're in a lot of irrevocable situations.
Yeah.
And Radiohead wants to get all of it, I think.
Yeah. Is there a sense that they're going to tour with an orchestra or, I mean...
We'll have to see. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Mm-hmm.
Or hire an orchestra in each town. They're complicated arrangements. I mean, there's Bollywood, there's, you know, plucking the strings, there's all kinds of extended techniques going on.
Yeah.
So if they were to hire orchestras, they'd have to rehearse.
Right. Also, I should mention that the weekend when these records came out, or certainly the days leading up to it, were very rainy in these parts. Do you remember? I mean, it was so gray, and these records came out and, you know, and illustrated the bummer. And now, you know, it's beautiful outside, so I feel like we can loop backwards to move ahead. Let's leave our unresolved questions in empty spaces and move forward. Thank you, John Pareles.
Thanks, Ben.
And that's True Love Waits by Radiohead. Thank you, John Pareles, for coming by.
Thanks.
You can read John Pareles on Radiohead and me on James Blake at nytimes.com/music. We'd like to thank our producer, Jocelyn Gonzalez. You can go to nytimes.com/popcast, and you can hear this episode as well as previous ones. We hope you subscribe to the Times Popcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, and Google Play, and we'll see you next week.
Don't.